This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This morning's labor market report is like going into the boss fully expecting to be fired and getting a promotion instead. I'm David Brancaccio. There's news 467,000 more people got jobs in January at a time some forecasters had thought there could have been contraction in hiring. But the pessimism clearly was not borne out. This despite the fact that households and payrolls were surveyed during a bad stretch for coronavirus infections. Jared Bernstein is a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Thank you for joining us.
It is my pleasure, especially today.
Yeah, you must have been surprised like everyone else, given all that Omicron last month.
Yes, this is an upside surprise. But what we do is we take longer-term trends. And if you do that with some of the technical revisions in today's report, you will see that payrolls are growing at a really strong pace.
This report shows wages up 5.7% year to year, but inflation was higher last year. So in real terms, maybe not a raise.
Well, if you look at the wage gains for the 80% of the workforce that are somewhat lower paid, middle and lower paid workers, their wages are pretty close to the pace of inflation. But look, elevated prices are a real challenge to American families. What we can do from our side is to work on the ports to make sure goods are getting from ship to shelf as quickly as possible. And we, along with our private sector folks we're working with, have had some real success there.
I mean, you may have to. I mean, surveys, you've seen them, show that people remain very worried about the direction of the economy. And they were telling that to surveyors, even as people were piling into the labor force, as we saw in today's report. I suppose that's a reminder that we judge our future well-being on more than just getting a job.
Well, no question. But at the same time, we really can't lose the backdrop of just how important at least two overall macroeconomic factors are to working families. One, the breakneck pace of GDP growth last year, fastest growth in almost 40 years. But for President Biden, GDP growth isn't enough. It has to reach working families. Well, how does it do that? Through the channel of a tight labor market. And we're seeing precisely that, a tight labor market that's delivering solid wage gains to working people. At the same time, we really need to do all we can to ease inflationary pressures. And if you look at forecasts of where inflation is going, it does have inflation growing about half as fast at the end of this year as it was last year. But we can't just sit around and watch and hope that comes true.
Yeah, Jared Bernstein is a member of President Biden's Council of Economic Advisors. Thank you. We've been talking about when they counted up payrolls in January. They also survey households, which puts the unemployment rate up slightly at 4%, in part because more workers are moving off the sidelines and into the labor force. Before the data came out this morning, we were talking about 2.3 million fewer people in the workforce compared to pre-COVID. Now, this January data today show about half that gap has gone away. Christopher Lowe is the chief economist at FHN Financial in New York.
I think what happened was those seasonal industries, when they hired people in November and December, they actually offered them permanent places this year, and it looks like hundreds of thousands stayed on. So the big rise in labor force participation in January, I don't think it really happened in January, but I do think it really happened. There are, it turns out, more than a million more workers in the labor force than we thought a month ago.
Now, some people will see this much stronger than expected jobs report and conclude that interest rates are going to go higher faster. If you factor in this notion that more people are entering the workforce, it might mean that interest rates don't go up as fast.
Well, that's right. You know, Jay Powell's been talking about the strength of the jobs numbers as a primary motivation for raising rates for months. But when he's talking about that strength, he's focused on the unemployment rate. He's not focused on non-farm payrolls. The idea is, the Fed worries we're going to run out of workers. So when you have a huge increase in participation, like the one in January, when you have even a modest increase in the unemployment rate, which went from 3.9 to 4% this month, when the labor market is tight, that's the kind of thing that is a huge relief for the Fed.
Chris Lowe at FHN Financial, chief economist there. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Still, the 10-year interest rate is up sharply now, 1.94%, with others betting that an economy that was stronger than first thought must imply higher interest rates. A large swath of the country, from Texas to Maine, is still grappling with freezing or fully foul weather this morning, and also with rising costs of heat. Prices are hitting multi-year highs given increased demand and supply shortages. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Average spot prices for natural gas in New England states are now at an 8-year high, according to the Energy Information Administration. Gas supplies are low, while demand is up 13%. That's also sending day-ahead electricity prices spiking. Many power plants rely on natural gas. Since that's in short supply, New England states have turned to power plants that burn fuel oil. And that's helping send the price of heating oil up, too. The fuel is used most in the Northeast. Heating oil futures have hit a 7-year high. Refineries are having trouble keeping up with the demand. I'm Nova Safa for Marketplace.
More on winter weather disruptions. Now, Texas lawmakers had passed a series of bills last year to try to prevent the widespread blackouts and natural gas problems that contributed to about 250 deaths amid freezing temperatures and snow and ice storms. Texas Governor Greg Abbott guaranteed that the lights would stay on during any coming winter storm, but this week, as new bad weather rolled in, he told reporters nobody could make that guarantee. Here's Marketplace's Andy Euler in Austin.
If anyone in Austin knows how electricity works, it's Michael Weber. He's an energy resources professor at the University of Texas. He's also dealing with a power outage at his home.
But I'm in a hilly, wooded area of Austin, so power going out when it's windy or icy is not unusual, frankly.
Early on in this weather system, the power outages have been like the one Weber is experiencing, local, caused by a fallen tree limb or a gust of wind. Last year's rolling blackouts were orchestrated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, the group that runs the grid here, because there wasn't enough power to keep up with demand. ERCOT CEO Brad Jones is forecasting record demand this morning, even more than when the grid faltered last year, but he says the system has enough supply to keep up. Some natural gas companies have already reported, though, that they're experiencing a loss of supply. Texas gets half of its power from natural gas. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
A few hotspots on Earth account for a lot of the methane gas emissions that contribute to climate change, and now for the first time, an international team of scientists has mapped these emissions using satellite data. This new research finds that Russia and the U.S. are among the so-called super emitters of methane, and cracking down on this would be comparatively easy. Following this for us is the BBC, where they pronounce it methane. Here's Jonah Fisher.
About a quarter of man-made methane emissions come from leaks from oil and gas facilities, and plugging those holes is seen as one of the easiest things we can do right now to try and slow the rise in global temperatures. The idea is that pinpointing where the methane leaks are, whether it be a pipeline or a drilling rig, will put pressure on the companies and countries involved to take action. Scientists believe the satellite monitoring of greenhouse gas emissions could be an important step away from the current system of reporting, which is largely based on countries presenting their own results.
Jonah Fisher, BBC on methane, methane, and for you fans of the Scottish play, the Thane of Cawdor. The Winter Olympics are officially underway with the opening ceremony in Beijing just now off and running. This is COVID Olympics number 2, and while China is now letting a limited number of spectators from within China attend some events, there were no tickets for international visitors, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
Even in non-pandemic times, hosting the Olympics was not exactly a moneymaker.
Overall, when we're talking about economic impact, we have found that there is no positive effect of hosting the Olympic Games.
Nola Aga is a professor of sport management at the University of San Francisco. She says even when people can travel to the Olympics and buy tickets for events,
we actually find that this influx of tourists that we expect doesn't make up for the decrease in local economic activity.
So how much does it matter then for China to not get any Olympic tourism this time around?
What they lose from not having spectators and not having tourists is probably about $500, $600 million in ticket sales and another maybe $100 million of hotel bills and restaurant expenditures.
Andrew Zimblist is a professor of economics at Smith College. He says considering China is spending billions to host the Olympics, it's not that significant a loss. What's more significant economically, Zimbalist says, is the fact that the government has slowed or stopped production at a number of factories to reduce pollution during the games.
That's hurting employment and hurting income and hurting the Chinese economy. And it's also hurting the world economy because it's exacerbating the supply chain problems that have arisen in large part because of COVID.
But for China, hosting the Olympics isn't about money, says Robert Daly at the Wilson Center.
China is doing this for reasons of glory internationally, but mostly domestically.
And in some ways, he says, all the pandemic restrictions actually work to the government's advantage.
China right now wants to give the impression that it is orderly, that it is safe, that it is well-governed. And the less that is actually going on, the fewer foreigners there are in China, the better for that.
Even if it costs more. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
I want to say thanks to the hardworking crew here. Our digital producer is Redmond Caralipio, engineers Jay Siebold and Jessen Dueler. Our intern is Jared Dang. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.